You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vanderweel.
And I'm Ron Bronson. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, April 20th, 2017.
These preventive measures early on is good enough to probably delay the onset of dementia. That's what we want. We want a disease-modifying therapy.
Researchers at IU are working to develop drugs that can prevent the onset of dementia. More on that later in the show, in today's episode of Big Talk with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street. We'll ask about free speech. But first, these local headlines.
A group of Indiana University students spoke out today against the university's handling of recent white nationalist speaking event and demanded IU take measures to increase diversity on campus. The group gathered this afternoon in front of Franklin Hall, the building that hosted the speech last week by the author Charles Murray. A member of the organization, Students Against State Violence, Rudo Medewa, spoke to the group about the university's handling of the Murray event.
We're responding to this institution hosting and giving a platform to a white supremacist last week. They brought someone here who was paid, presumably an honorarium. This person was in that building over there. That building was closed to students. It's a public building on this campus. Our institution locked a building on this campus. Not only that, brought a major police force out to prevent all of you from accessing a building that you paid tuition to enter. That is a bad thing. This is a public institution. They brought those police who then assaulted students and were essentially preventing students from exercising their free speech rights.
About 70 officers were on hand during the Murray event on April 11th. A state police officer was filmed shoving a protester repeatedly to the ground after the speech. Police also drug another student into Franklin Hall, where she was held for about 30 minutes as protesters outside demanded her release. That student, Stella Schaefer, has not been charged with a crime. During today's event, which was titled Decolonize IU, a member of the Black Graduate Student Association, Kevin Lewis, took issue with what he called white militarized police using force against the student body.
The fact that a university can claim to espouse values of inclusion and equity but provide a platform in Franklin Hall for white supremacy to live and breathe is appalling. To me, white supremacist views and ideology cannot coexist with a commitment to honor and protect students of color. My black body is already left vulnerable and open to attack in Bloomington as is. So how does giving white supremacy and police force a platform to exist on campus mitigate that? It does not.
Speakers at today's rally urged the university to take steps that were outlined last year in a resolution passed by the Bloomington Faculty Council. Those steps included enrolling more Pell Grant recipients, dedicating more resources to recruiting and retaining underrepresented faculty and staff of color, and adding a social justice component to the existing general education requirements. Students were critical of the university for being slow to address those issues.
Here we are again, demanding for what seems to be basic student rights and calling out blatant visible manifestations of white supremacy at Indiana University. As the original decolonized letter stated, we are demanding for the bare minimum for what a university should be committing itself to.
University spokespeople did not agree to interview requests today about the group's demands. Instead, the Director of Strategic Communications, Nicole Wilkins, sent WFHB a statement with the information about the status of the university's existing efforts regarding recruitment, retention, and Pell Grant recipients. Wilkins says 26% of IU undergraduates receive Pell Grants. The Pell Grant number is considered by many to be the best available method for tracking how many low-income undergrads attend a given university. The most recent nationwide numbers from U.S. News and World Report state that dozens of national universities have Pell Grant numbers exceeding 40%. In her statement, Wilkins indicated a committee is still debating whether to include the diversity requirement. After the speeches today, participants read aloud from a 1979 piece by the Black lesbian feminist Audre Lorde, which critiqued feminists who Lorde sees as perpetuating patriarchy. In the statement distributed at the event, organizers state, quote, "We direct these words specifically to Provost Lauren Rebell, a white scholar who has published extensively on race but currently uses her considerable influence in the way that Lorde decried to replicate models of power that exclude those of us who have been forged in the crucibles of difference," end quote. A spokesperson for the provost's office, Jennifer Purick, directed questions to the provost to IU spokesperson Margie Smith-Simmons, who referred to the statement from Wilkins.
Smokers of electronic cigarettes now risk receiving a $100 fine if they smoke in public. In their meeting last night, the Bloomington City Council approved adding e-cigarettes to a city ordinance that bans smoking in public places. Beverly Callender Anderson, the city's Community and Family Resources Director, explained the reasoning behind amending the ordinance to include vaping.
The amendment to the current smoking ordinance to include electronic smoking devices will strengthen efforts to protect the health and safety of Bloomington residents and visitors. It will protect youth and young adults from observing and participating in activities that might encourage them to utilize electronic smoking devices, conventional cigarettes, or other tobacco products, and it will facilitate continued enforcement of the city's current smoking ordinance.
Callender Anderson said the goal is to protect children, the elderly, and those with medical conditions from the hazards of e-cigarette vapors. The council approved two additional amendments from council member Isabel Piedmont-Smith. One requires that e-cigarettes be listed on no smoking signs to avoid confusion for enforcement. The other amendment makes clear smoking e-cigarettes is allowed in retail smoke shops. Councilmember Steve Volan and Isabel Piedmont-Smith requested the council postpone a final vote on the ordinance change to allow time to review a wealth of conflicting research provided by supporters and detractors. Some members said the demands of reviewing documentation on other issues coming before the council took up so much of their time they couldn't linger on the e-cigarette issue. Piedmont-Smith cited the issue's complexity.
We got the additional data with web links to studies, to long studies, from the administration on Monday. We got 250 pages last week. There's a lot to go into this issue. And if we are going to vote just based on inconvenience or somebody being obnoxious, well, then we can, you know, regulate people speaking loudly or people not showering and smelling bad. I mean, it is a scientific question. So I'm sorry to go off on that tangent, but I request that my colleagues consider the complexity of the issue.
Councilmember Sturp.
And not just their own convenience. Thank you.
Other council members, like Susan Sandberg, saw a clear-cut need for the ban.
As I'm reviewing my decision on this matter, it has less to do with maybe conflicting science. This is a relatively new product, and all the jury may be out on potential harms. But I think there is enough of a nuisance factor. And again, this is based on some emails that I've gotten from constituents saying that they are bothered by it. When they sit next to someone in a public place who is vaping, that odor can be noxious to certain people. It's not pleasant. So regardless of the science of harm or how much is too much harm, is it more harmful than cigarettes, less harmful than cigarettes, the harm factor isn't what's determining my vote. It is the nuisance factor of respecting someone else's right to go to a public place, a restaurant, wherever, place of work, and not have to breathe in someone else's secondhand smoke, regardless of what the vehicle is.
Council members went on to hear from both supporters and critics of e-cigarette use. Supporters maintain e-cigarettes help smokers quit traditional cigarettes. They say the vapors are less toxic than the secondhand cigarette smoke or even car exhaust fumes. Detractors say studies show e-cigarette vapor contains many different toxins.
Personal or sensitive information is at risk as work-from-home scams appear to be increasing in Indiana. Hoosiers are being contacted via email by scammers offering to hire them for work-from-home positions. Some red flags to keep an eye out for: the scammers offer high wages ranging from $20 to $24 an hour. The jobs offer flexible work hours. And the biggest red flag of them all, the email typically requests private information commonly needed during a hiring process, such as your phone number, a copy of your state identification, and bank account information. Hoosiers are warned to never send this type of information over email. The scam emails may also include links to websites that look professional. Additionally, consumers are often told they need to buy specialized equipment with a promise they will be reimbursed. Indiana Consumer Protection Division suggests that if Hoosiers receive an email containing any of these red flags, they should not respond. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. Now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Research is at Indiana University's Lew Lab for the study of neural networks have discovered that caffeine, among two other common components, can strengthen brain cells and help ward off Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, and other degenerative brain diseases. Before you decide to drink a pot or two of coffee every morning in the hopes of avoiding these maladies, one of the lab's key scientists, Youssef Ali, cautions that the findings are just a step towards developing effective drugs that can prevent the onset of dementia. Ali joins Michael Glab on this week's edition of Big Talk to discuss these exciting new findings.
Hi, this is Big Talk. Michael Glab here. My guest this week, research scientist Youssef Ali. He works at Indiana University's Gill Center for Biomolecular Science. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Mike, for having me.
One of the reasons we're having you is because of this fantastic work you're doing dealing with these tiny little things called neurons.
Yes, I've always been fascinated studying how these brain cells are formed and how they connect with each other and how they are disrupted in diseases like Alzheimer's.
Let's get to the first questions. What precisely is a neuron?
It's a principal building unit of the brain. So these are brain cells that communicate with each other and forms the basis of learning and memory, emotion, and all sorts of functions that the brain does. And they're supported by other cells in the brain called glial cells, which provide support and make sure that these cells stay alive from the time they're born. And when we have loss of these neurons, you see commonly in diseases like Alzheimer's, the brain function is disrupted.
The typical neuron sort of looks like a tree in the wintertime, you know, denuded, bare, and leafless.
Yes, that's a very accurate description. In fact, the very first drawings by Cajal shows these beautiful fine processes that emanate from the central cell body, which is where you have, you know, the nucleus and whatnot. And these are specialized polarized cells. So you have one process called the axon that basically connects it to other neurons and relays the information that that brain cell gets and spreads it to whatever circuit it's forming.
So is that like a telephone line?
It is like a telephone line, and some of these processes can be very, very, very long. And then you have another process from the cell body that's called the dendrites. Now, these are beautiful, branched, delicate structures that receive the information, which is later relayed on to other parts of the brain.
If something goes amiss, mm-hmm. you will have neurodegenerative disease.
Exactly.
Quite possibly.
Yes. So one of the most common neurodegenerative disorders that's increasing in numbers is Alzheimer's. Mm-hmm. You also have other diseases like Parkinson's and Huntington's. So the pathology and the causes of these diseases might be very unique to them. But at the end of it, you have degeneration in which the synapses are the first that go away. And so when you don't have these synapses, when you get rid of these connections, you basically are affecting the function of that area. For instance, the area that's affected in Alzheimer's is the hippocampus, amongst others, where if you get rid of these neurons, you cannot learn, you cannot remember, you cannot reform or retain memories.
And process. This is what we would be describing when we say dementia.
Exactly. All the memory that you formed is because of these information that these neurons have retained and established. So when these brain cells are gone, the memories are gone.
And some of the work that you and your colleagues mm-hmm. are doing, hopefully, will remedy some of these diseases.
We definitely hope to. What our lab, I'm a part of the LU lab. One of the main facets of the lab is understanding how these brain cells maintain the synapses. What are the essential proteins that this neuron needs to survive throughout a lifetime? Because once they're born, they have to survive throughout the whole lifetime of an individual.
Wow.
Because once they're gone, they cannot be replaced that easily. So we are interested in understanding what these important proteins are that help the neuron to survive throughout its lifetime, and also to understand the pathological processes that happen in diseases like Alzheimer's that cause these neurons to die.
Now, last year, you and your colleagues in the LU lab, and can you tell us real quickly, who is LU?
Oh, yes. Huichen Liu is endowed Gill chair. I was a part of her lab from Baylor College of Medicine.
Right.
And so she is, she moved her whole lab from Baylor, and we all came to Indiana University to be a part of the Gill Center.
So last year,
yes,
that gang
yes.
published a paper. Now, it showed that a certain enzyme can prevent misfolding and clumping of proteins in the brain, which we don't want because that either leads to or is these neurodegenerative brain diseases like Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, ALS, which is Lou Gehrig's disease.
Exactly. Throughout one's lifetime, this happens way before you get the disease. So if you have a lot of junk in the neuron, so it provides some sort of a stress to the neurons, so they cannot clear them off. It's like a full overflowing garbage can. So these are pathological hallmarks, and these are linked to why the neurons become sick.
So you have identified this particular enzyme, which may prevent this kind of junk.
We were interested in identifying therapeutic targets that can prevent or reduce the loss of neurons in these diseases. So one of them was this enzyme called NMNAT, and it makes a very important cofactor in your brain, in your cells, called NAD. If you reduce the level of this protein in these neurons below a certain threshold, that is enough to trigger neurodegeneration. Our goal is to find a drug, for instance, that engages this enzyme and increases its level.
Last month, you and the crew released a paper identifying 24 compounds that can boost the enzyme. One of those compounds, caffeine. And by the way, you're drinking a cup of coffee right now, I see.
Yes. So once we identified that this protein can be very neuroprotective and can get rid of all these toxic proteins, so we wanted to understand how this protein is regulated to better get a grasp on designing better drugs targeting this protein. So amongst the upregulators, we had caffeine. That was interesting because you have so many studies in animal models and in humans that talk about caffeine being neuroprotective. Will I advocate people drinking coffee? Probably not. It definitely has its benefits, but the kind of caffeine dosing we were doing was equivalent to maybe like 4 to 5 cups of coffee a day. We did very acute studies. So we just injected pure caffeine in mice and looked at the level of this protein. And with 2 injections of pure caffeine, we saw an increase. Now, we didn't do any chronic studies to dose caffeine and see if it has an effect on dementia. But I think other people have done it, and some groups have shown beneficial effect. The main punchline here is these preventive measures early on is good enough to probably delay the onset of dementia. That's what we want. We want a disease-modifying therapy because you don't have any treatment for Alzheimer's. I hope we reach a point in our lifetime to find a cure for Alzheimer's or dementia. But during the wait, if we can come up with ways to delay the onset such that you never get the disease in your lifetime, that would be beneficial.
Yusuf Ali, research scientist. Thank you so much for joining us on Big Talk.
Thank you, Mike. Thanks a lot for having me.
Support for WFHB comes from Monster Digital Marketing, offering digital marketing solutions for small businesses. Monster Digital Marketing websites are built for search engine optimization with both the desktop and the mobile device user in mind. located at monsterdigitalmarketing.com or on the phone at 317-567-1197.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, threats to free speech. Events leading up to and following the election of Donald Trump as president have raised questions about freedom of speech in the United States. During the campaign, Trump famously ejected protesters from his rallies and promised to strengthen libel laws to curtail the rights of the press. In recent months, prominent white nationalists have made campus speaking tours, with supporters declaring the controversial events as triumphs of free speech. Others have protested or disrupted the speeches, often arguing that freedom of speech doesn't mean freedom to a university platform for that speech. This week, we hit the streets to ask your friends and neighbors, what do you think is the biggest threat to freedom of speech today?
I feel like one of the threats of free speech is maybe like retaliation from people. Maybe people just not feeling safe to like say what they want to say.
I guess the biggest threat to free speech these days is that people are just scared sometimes to reveal their own opinions. So I don't go here. I go to UVA where you have a lot of like liberals running around. So I guess like a lot of like conservative people feel kind of like threatened sometimes that they just like keep to themselves.
I don't feel like it's really that threatened. I guess maybe like the government listening to everything you do is kind of concerns me a little bit, but I don't know. I don't feel like my free speech is personally threatened.
The biggest threat to free speech is people's individual ideology and their inability to accept the ideology of others.
I don't think free speech is really free speech, you know what I'm saying? Like, they say that we have free speech, but then they restrict us on so many things, you know?
I would say is probably today political correctness. We find universities across the country and in more liberal societies that once were bastions of free speech are now clamping down and saying, we accept free speech as long as it's something that we agree with. Free speech is for everyone. When I was a teenager, I advocated for the city of Bloomington granting a permit to the KKK so they could hold a parade. Didn't like what they had to say, but they had the right to say it.
I don't know, maybe some surveillance, things like that. That's my first thought.
I think censorship, really. I think we are censored. I think the media is censored. I think the media controls what they put out and what they don't, and we don't hear everything.
With this in the town of Bloomington, the police officers make it that way. If you say a word or make a noise, first thing they think about is locking you up for disorderly conduct or keep harassing you all day. You're not allowed to speak freely. If I tell a cop, look, you're f***ing harassing me, I don't want you doing it, stop driving around in circles, he's like, well, f*** you, deal with it, I can put you in jail. No, you can't, because I call down the city hall, it's called harassment.
I don't know, I guess people standing by and not standing up for what they believe in, just letting things pass.
I feel like people not being educated enough and not knowing what they... The people that do use free speech are uneducated, so just it's not using free speech correctly.
Yeah, it goes like both ways. Yeah. Like if you are using free speech, you have people who don't really understand that just because you're saying something doesn't mean you're attacking them. And then also on the other hand, like people that do give free speech a bad rep a little bit, like they'll say things and they'll be really, you know, adamant about that and really pushing upon it, and they're not using actual
so
facts.
So I feel like it uses, I think it's like personal biases and just people that like have not wrong views, but views that are considered hateful and stuff like that.
I think in large part it's just ingrained way we were raised and stuff. You know, people have very pointed views and they don't want to hear other people's views. So I think it's just closed-mindedness in this country and kind of the political divide.
There ain't no freedom of speech. There's not. If there's freedom of speech, why cops arrest people in parks? When they speak, like when they play their music, they go to jail. Come on. There's no freedom of speech. If there's freedom of speech, then come on, give it to me, because there's not none out here.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Joe Crawford, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cast Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Voices in the Street was produced by Joe Crawford and Christopher Boyle. Our engineer today is Chris Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Joe Crawford. For WFHB, this is Ron Bronson.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Blooming Out, Indiana's only LGBTQI public affairs show. Coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.